Anything goes.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Anything Goes. As ever, with me, Tom Cruise, and my best pal, Josh Bassett.
It's been a big week for us, hasn't it? First live podcast last Thursday went quite well.
Yeah, it went really well.
Happy with it?
Yeah, underselling it a bit there, mate.
Well, you know, hopefully we'll get a few more going. And I'm excited. Yeah. And I'm very excited about today. We've got two very special guests. Martin Bayfield.
Very special. Special being the operator.
Martin Bayfield and Ben Kay. Thank you, lads, for coming.
Pleasure. Thank
you. Nervous or excited?
Hugely.
Yeah, obviously you've heard a lot about the pod, haven't you, sir?
Well, I listen every week. Yeah. Or every 2 weeks.
That 1 week.
Yeah. What was your favourite one?
The one...
With the one
with the really bad audio.
The first one. There we go. Dan Robson's one.
We've told them way too much beforehand. We've prepped them too well, haven't we?
You have a good quality of sofa. Yeah. This is nice. Very relaxing.
This is actually where the Academy hang out in between their first session at 8 a.m. and then their second session, which is usually like 3 p.m. So you're actually on someone's bed there.
Yeah.
No, should we jump straight in then?
Yeah,
jump
definitely.
With the Six Nations, obviously the last couple of weeks, there's been a break in the Premiership. England got off to a bit of a sticky start in France, but then last week obviously beat Scotland in the Calcutta Cup. There's been a bit of media attention with the Ellis Genge interview afterwards. I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on that and players and personalities. And
well, I can imagine a certain group of rugby fans would not like to hear what Ellis Genge said and how he looks and drinking a bottle of beer live on TV, but they belong in a different era, and you can let them chunter away and complain and moan as much as they like. I'm a big fan of Ellis Genge. I'm a big fan of what he says. He's incredibly honest. He's got a big story to tell. First and foremost, he's a good rugby player, and he had a moment to celebrate. You know, he got England that win, and that's a big deal. But I would imagine the majority of rugby fans and supporters now see Ellis Genge and see all the England players and see a very diverse bunch of individuals and get it and understand it. There will be some who don't, and they can howl at the moon as much as they like, but they are wrong to do so.
I just think that, you know, you've got up here, Britain and Ireland, there's a lot of people that like to be outraged by stuff that's not actually that outrageous. And they almost take delight in it. And social media's made that worse now. I think, you know, over the last few years, people can actually vent that straight away. But if they were talking in a normal conversation, they probably wouldn't be quite so vociferous about how awful it was. And I agree, you know, that you probably get the same people saying if a player just straight bats it, doesn't give you anything, you know, one-word answers, they'll probably be the ones that are whinging that they've got nothing about them. So I love to see it. I think the players' personality, I'm not saying that every player has to do it, but I think specific players' personalities should come out in interviews, and it shouldn't sound like it's something that's been handed to them by the press officer before they go into an interview. And the more we can do that, the more people are going to fall in love with the game.
Yeah, I agree.
I think for us, this is why we started this podcast, was to get the fans involved and to get them to know the players, isn't it? And we all know in the modern game, everyone's very well media trained these days. They've all got their list of bullet points that they need to tick off by the end of it. And the media guy is giving you the thumbs up in the back. But we want people to know, you know, we are humans and know our personalities, because otherwise, like you said, the interviews, they just get boring, and it's the same stuff getting regurgitated every week, isn't it? So that's one of the reasons we started. And I think, from my take on it, is, you know, rugby's got its traditions in having a beer after the game with the lads, with the team that you've played. I'm thinking, what's wrong with him having a swig of beer? He's taken a lot of caffeine. Like you said, he's very excited. He's just scored. He's probably not going to sleep that much. So having a little beer just to calm down and enjoy it with the lads that he's just, you know, played a game with. What's wrong with that?
You guys will know that better than us now, but, you know, all the sort of high-end athletic performance that you guys do, the one time you can have a beer without it is straight after you've emptied the tank on the pitch. You know that you've probably got tomorrow off, or at least it's going to be a very light recovery day. And I love the fact that these players are going into the changing room, the opposition changing room, and having a beer with their opposite number and trying to keep some of that old school element alive in a highly professional atmosphere. Like, yeah. The sports science in rugby now is as strong as any other sport in the world, but you still want that link back to the old era where rugby was a place that you could make mates that 10 years down the line when you're retired, you bump into them like we do, lucky enough to do at internationals, and you have another beer with them because you've created those friendships.
It's such an important thing to do, because long after that final whistle blows on your career, unless you're an absolute nause like Martin Johnson, whose pictures are everywhere, who can remember every score of every game he's ever played in, you won't remember what the scores were. You won't remember those, but you'll remember the atmosphere. You'll remember the moment where you sat in the dressing room with your mate having a beer. You'll remember those, and those are the things that will stick with you.
I think being a massive personality himself, Eddie Jones likes having characters in his squad, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because you see the likes of like Genge's one, Joe Marler, who again, there was a thing in the on social media that he went in and saw the young tight head that he was up against.
Yeah.
And that was another big story. And like you talking about the traditions and keeping the traditions in the game, that really shouldn't be a big deal, I don't think. I think like he came out and said afterwards, that's just part of our game. That's what everyone should do. Yeah.
Well, you talk to John Schmidt, who's won over 100 caps for South Africa, World Cup winner in 2007. And he will recount the story of, on the Lions tour to South Africa in 1997, of Jason Leonard coming into the dressing room and giving him his shirt. Because he didn't want to hand over his provincial shirt, because it was his first game. So Jason said, don't worry, you can still have my Lions shirt. I'm not expecting yours in return. So this is a guy now who has 100 caps, but one of them... most important moments in his career is big old fun bus coming in and sitting down with him and having a beer and talking about it. And we look at the individuals, and you look at what's happening with Scotland, and there is a rift there. And it would appear part of that rift is one player wants to have a slightly more relaxed, almost bohemian attitude to his rugby and his rugby existence, and how he wants to play the game. And there seems to be a fairly draconian approach from Gregor Townsend towards Finn Russell, that no, these are the rules, this is what happens. It's interesting talking about Finn Russell, because he obviously went to the press on, well, the article came out on the Sunday. Apparently he'd given the interview before and said don't publish this before the Calcutta Cup match, needs to be done afterwards. And so we got his side of it. But now Gregor Townsend has released a statement through the SRU, very clearly laying out that he felt things didn't go particularly well for Scotland, both on the field and off the field. In Japan, there were certain things that needed to be tightened up on. And the playing group came up with a very strict set of rules that all the players signed up to and agreed to. And that it is this that Finn Russell didn't adhere to. He had a long conversation with him after the fact that he'd come back into the Scottish camp, had a beer when he shouldn't have had a beer. And then they had a chat, and he feels... the interesting thing about this, Ben, is that he feels that after a three-hour conversation, he felt that Finn Russell, that enough ground had been covered, maybe, and recovered for him to come back within the Scotland squad, but Finn Russell feels this is not the case.
I think it's such a difficult situation now, because you've almost... having set those ground rules down and the senior... the problem was he wasn't there, and I'm sure if he felt that as one of the senior players he'd had his input into them, even if they'd all agreed it, then he would have been happier, but... he's obviously got this feeling that Gregor's too controlling. We know about the supposed row at half-time in the England match at Twickenham last year, where he said the tactics aren't working, we should hold on to it a bit more, playing into England's hands. I don't see a resolution to this, because you've got the star player who, when you start announcing tit-for-tat messages in the press, trying to get your side of the story out, I don't see how it's resolved. But if Gregor had allowed Finn to come in and have a few drinks when the players had said, we're not going to do that, he loses all his credibility with the whole of the playing group. Because you can't, if the star player comes in and's drinking and everyone else said, we're only going to have two beers or whatever it is, what are the other players going to say to him? They're going to say, oh, it's this one rule for one and another for the others.
This certainly smacks of something that has been rumbling for more than just even more than just from that half time in the Calcutta Cup match last year. This has been a breakdown in a relationship for some period of time. Not good for Scotland. Good for Scotland. They are not blessed with a huge player pool. They need someone of his quality.
No, absolutely. And Finn is playing at one of the most exciting clubs in the world. We haven't really seen this in rugby before. We've seen it in football, where you get the inkling that someone would prefer to play for Man United than England, or Liverpool than England. We've never really seen it in rugby, but you get the impression that Finn's thinking, well, I'd love to play for Scotland. Scotland, I'm Scottish through and through, but I'm not going to play on any terms, and because my life at Racing 92 will compensate.
It's a bit unfair, isn't it, comparing Racing 92 with Scotland and saying this is the style of play they play, this is what I want to play. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of fun looking at those players around him, but it's a different environment, isn't it, up at Scotland? Yeah. We'll see. I think it's going to be fascinating.
What do you guys reckon about... So, I guess you have a code of conduct for Wasps, do you? How would that sit if... You know?
I think it's like you said, if, for me, every player has to be involved in that code of conduct, whether that's because, obviously, he wasn't there, so he has to adhere by it, but... I know here we make sure the whole squad's involved in it. Everyone's happy. You know, you're not going to get 50 people to agree to everything, but as long as everyone's happy with what we've set, then we can move forward with it. But for me, that's probably what has, you know, caused potentially this to happen, is because he hasn't been involved in it. Does he fully know what the code of conduct is? Maybe not. He's come in and... Then, like you said, if he has an input in it, that probably allows him, you know, to have some accountability towards it. But because he hasn't had any input, he probably doesn't have any. I feel like he has any accountability. So then that puts him in a tough position.
What do we call, is this going to be called Beergate? Whenever there's a problem, they put gate on the end of it. Is this Beergate?
Beergate, Bexit, whichever one you want.
Yeah.
Bexit, huge from you. Like,
the Gregor thing, though, is that, you know, Finn Russell would walk into a Scotland team anytime. There's England, yeah. If there's players that are sort of stepping out of line of the agreed boundaries, and I think Finn's thing was that he wasn't there when the boundaries were agreed, yeah, despite being one of the senior players.
Didn't quite know what they were.
But you can put someone else in. The fallout with Finn Russell, a lot of it has been down to the fact that he is far and away their sort of star player, and that's really difficult for them to mend.
No, but I think as like we've said, is that having a beer after is what we believe sets rugby apart about with all these other sports in the world, that you do create these relationships. And so it's hard for us because we want these traditions to keep going and keep pushing forward, because we believe that's what, you know, separates us from the likes of other sports that are shown on BT.
What about you guys? So you guys, you'll play Tigers at the weekend. Will you spend, how much time would you spend with the Tigers players afterwards? Would you socialise with them for a bit or not? Do you get that chance?
You do afterwards, because we eat afterwards, don't we, yeah. together. But I think, generally, rugby's such a small world now. Naturally, you probably know someone in the opposition, and that obviously creates an invitation to either go into their changing room, or you'll be chatting to him and one of his mates will come over, another conversation starts. I think at the weekend, Jonah Holmes was here. He wasn't here while I was here. I played against him before when he was at Leeds. But like, you, obviously...
Kyle, Guy Thompson, I think... Players do move around quite a bit now, and you do create them relationships, so you have that opportunity after. I don't know how it was obviously back in the day where, you know, a lot of people were one club men, so you probably had to do a bit more socialising going into change rooms. But for us, you know, you kind of have them texts, them WhatsApps during the week, getting stuck into each other. But you're always excited to see them, because a lot of them lads have played here for a good couple of seasons, and you've made a lot of memories with them here, and you're making memories playing against them as well.
A lot of the coaches... now are actually trying to encourage the boys to stick around together after a game and have a beer together, because the danger is that, you know, you come in, you play your game, and you'll just scoot straight home, and everyone's got families and stuff. And I know something that Aaron Major, when he came to Leicester, he was right, half an hour after the game we're all going to sit in the changing room and have a beer together, and then we'll go and do our corporate responsibilities and go and see our families. But for all, you know, we know that you've got to be professional as a rugby player. There's an element that having a beer together and socialising together can bring a team tighter together.
It does.
And so there's always a place for that. And as long as you're not doing anything that's to the detriment of your performance, it's a good thing, right?
Yeah. I'm quite glad I couldn't get in contact with opposition in the build-up to a week before a game. I think we just send a carrier pigeon with a strongly worded insult, and that's about as much as we could do.
Moving on a little bit, the Premiership itself is looking pretty tight. I think it's 5 points that is separating 3rd to 10th, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
Obviously, looking really tight. We know ourselves that it can be really temperamental. One win and all the chats about getting in the top four. One loss and, you know, it's the worst season in the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we thought last season was the tightest season we'd ever experienced. I think this one's going to be even closer. I think we've seen now, there are various reasons for that. One, the World Cup has allowed teams early on in the campaign to get a bit of a head start. I think the injection of money from CVC has allowed teams to spend right up to their salary cap. So if you look at someone like Sale, they've really, really invested. Worcester as well have come in. The London Irish have spent hard to make sure they've got strong, strong squads. So as soon as you do that, then that breakaway that we've seen for so many seasons of the top three or four teams by now being two wins away from everyone below them, those have gone. Even Exeter in recent weeks have been reeled back in a little bit. So it's getting much, much tighter. I think the quality of the squads and the strength and depth has improved amongst the majority of the Premiership sides. The quality of the players as well within that has allowed now teams that you know historically would say, well, they're really, really going to struggle. Maybe not to push up into the top six, but they'll take enough points off those teams above them to stop them from pulling far enough away.
I think absolutely right. I agree with that. But then at the other end of the table, Saracens and definitely being relegated means that usually you get that big lot in the middle, and then once that gap opens up, it becomes a relegation dogfight. And if you're in that relegation dogfight, no matter how much the coaches say, all we've got to do is concentrate on our performance, all you're thinking about is not losing the game. If you go out not to lose games, you go out not to make mistakes, don't you? So you actually become not as good a performing team because you're not trying things in case you're the one who makes the mistake and you lose a game, it's all on you. Without that, teams haven't got to worry about that. So teams that are at the bottom can be thinking, look, even come the end of the season, they can be thinking, look, we're definitely not going down. So what can we do for the next few weeks that's going to put us performance-wise and what we want to do next year in the right thing? So they'll be trying stuff. And I think those relegation dogfights will be gone and you'll see everyone going out. So I think you'll get more unexpected results at the end of the season than we do in any other season, which means it'll be even tighter this year.
Do you think that was the case with London Irish obviously going to Northampton and picking up that big result, which I don't think many people really expected? Obviously the news of Sarries had come probably a week prior.
I don't know, I think London Irish would have put that performance in, because if you look at the players that they're able now to bring into their side, they are quality players. I think Northampton, they've shown it a few times this season, and haven't been great at closing out games, have opened the door for teams to come back at them. And that was just sort of full blood and guts game, really. The thing for London Irish, which will be a huge relief for them, is knowing they can't get relegated, but they would have backed themselves not to be relegated anyway. But it has taken off the pressure. They've got a new stadium to move into next season.
Yeah.
And for them, it was absolutely crucial they moved in as a Premiership side and not as a Championship side. So that's a big tick for them. What will be interesting is to come towards the end of the season, as soon as teams realise that they're maybe not pushing for top six and they can't be relegated, then do we see teams switching off? And then possibly some results at the end of the season get slightly skewed. And those teams, you know, if you're playing against them and you want to get into the top four, want to get into the top six, you might have a slightly easier ride than normal.
Now, obviously today, I've said obviously again, today you two on the other side of the table, media-wise, we were just wondering if it was something that you guys have always wanted to do, you know, looking at post-career stuff for us now has become a huge thing with the RPA, and you two obviously gone into media. Was there anything else on the cards? Was it a bit of coaching or was it just straight in?
Toblerone tester, as we spoke about earlier.
Well, yeah. I feel I need to explain why you just suddenly said Toblerone tester at me. That just look at his face. Do
excited.
Not say things like that when he's around. So, Toblerone tester. Well, I realise that the style of sweet someone eats here is a very important thing. And we were discussing this, and my father used to run the factory that made Toblerone. And that was the reason why Toblerone became a topic of conversation.
Great chocolate, though.
Excellent.
A great chocolate.
An excellent
chocolate. Could be coming
chocolate.
Up later.
It is an excellent chocolate, particularly if you keep it in the fridge. And then when you eat it, I always like a food that kind of fights back. Mm. And so a Toblerone, a refrigerated Toblerone, doesn't die easy. Watch out.
Watch out on your teeth.
Yeah, yeah, so that's good. But anyway, moving on to media, career media. Well, I coached for 2 years briefly at the Saints when I retired, and it was the embryonic stage of academies. The game had just gone pro, bringing in the academies, and a guy called Brett Taylor was setting up the academy at Northampton. I retired through injury and then started working in the academy. Another place, another time, I'm sure it would have been great, but being at your club, watching your teammates getting ready for the next game, it was absolutely killing me. Absolutely killing me. And I did it for 2 years, and I would have to say I didn't really give it my heart and soul, because I just didn't want to be there. I wanted to get away from rugby as much as I could, which I eventually did. And then a little bit after that, started to get into the media side of things. It would have been about late 90s, early 2000s, I started doing stuff with BBC, Five Live, punditry, and then commentating.
You were a policeman before.
I was policeman before. So I could have gone back into the police. I took a five-year career break and only did a year and a half of that. That went well. So I could have gone back into the police. But I thought, no, I've got 3.5 years still to go on that, so I'll see what else comes up. Did some coaching. And then, bizarrely, the boy wizard came along, Harry Potter, and ended up working on the Harry Potter films, which for me was a huge blessing, because it took me away from rugby for just long enough.
You were Hermione, yeah?
For me. Great business then. And it just allowed me to sort of just park the, I can't play rugby anymore. And then I got back into it with media, and I kind of sort of fell in love with the game again. And so it's sort of through Five Live and then ITV with the World Cup in 2007. And then here we are now with BT.
Yeah, so when I was 16, I wiped all the cartilage off the back of my patella. So all throughout my career, various medics and doctors were saying, you've got a couple of years left, which was actually quite a good thing.
How do you wipe the...
The kneecap sort of half dislocated a couple of times, and just sort of, I think it was too tight sitting on the knee. So when it went, it just did a bit of damage behind. All the way through my career, I was worried about, and I actually very nearly didn't go full-time professional, because I was 23 when I joined Leicester, and I'd sort of made the decision I was going to stay semi-professional, because I didn't think my knee would be able to live up to the demands of every everyday training and the sort of toll it would take, but got sort of persuaded to go and give it a go, and thankfully I did. But all through my career I was thinking, let's keep all the doors open, and to any player I'd say, just keep as many options open to yourself as possible. You don't have to decide exactly what you're going to do until the end. The media thing, you'd always dreamed of doing something like that, but we all know there's only a certain number of jobs to go around, a little bit like coaching. But then I probably actually retired at 34, a year younger than I would have done, but just got an opportunity with ESPN at the time to go in there. But I'd set up or sort of helped a guy that had come in to do a photo shoot with me when he was at an advertising agency, and I'd done a degree while I was a part-time rugby player at Loughborough, and it's a sports and business degree, but I'd majored on the marketing side, so I'd always been interested in marketing and advertising. So he ended up setting up an agency on his mum's kitchen table, and I helped him with a few contacts that I was making through my rugby career, and then started going in on my days off to learn the business and the industry, and now that's sort of 50% of my time. The other 50% is the media, and the agency's doing fantastically well now. There's 60 of us in Shoreditch in London, and big brands that we're working with. So I'm really having a bad knee was a bind throughout my career, but it actually was a really good thing, because it focused my mind that you had to keep doors open for whatever you might do when you finish, and it's worked out really well for me.
Was there any times in them early parts of your media career where you thought, oh, I'm in over my head, this is a bit, this isn't what I signed up for, or anything, that got put out there by an agent maybe saying, look, have a go at this and see where you go with it?
Nothing. I mean, there have been some bloopers.
Game of Thrones, we've heard.
Yes, I had to turn down a role in Game of Thrones because of my loyalty to BT.
Turn it down.
I did. Yeah.
Wow.
Probably the only person who's turned down a role in Game of Thrones.
HBO who?
I know. Well, exactly. And I, because BT was just launching the same weekend, I was going to be doing battle on a cliffside in Croatia.
So you could have been... Sounds awful. I'm hearing you could have been the mountain.
I was going to be the mountain, yeah. I was going to push someone's eyes out.
Martin the Mountain Bayfield.
Yeah.
that's what your wife calls you.
She does it well. So rolling hillside rather than mountain.
So what we're hearing from that is that Hat 4 Bjornsson is your, you know, second choice, basically.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't say that. He is enormous. He's absolutely enormous. Yeah.
If that happened, you would have been the spawniest player. Harry Potter. Straight into, basically, people would have gone, right, get Martin Bayfield. It's bound to be a success if you're Martin Bayfield.
Yeah, no, I was gutted. And the casting agent for Vegas, are you absolutely sure you want to turn this down? It's like, on the media thing, I haven't had any real absolute howlers. I've had a few, you know, slip of the tongue saying that the French got an impressive centre parting instead of centre pairing. And you'll do that sort of nonsense you come out with, but no... No absolute stinkers.
Too well trained.
I dropped the C bomb live on air. Live on air. Totally by accident. I tried to say.
Are you sure it's by accident?
Yeah, no, I did. I tried to say the Harlequins forwards coming from the front round the corner and got front and corner mixed up.
You even had to concentrate there to
very carefully. And then, it was obviously you know, it was a freezing day. It was obvious. No one would have really noticed, apart from Austin, absolutely pissing himself, laughing.
Yeah.
That I'd dropped it on air, and then I got a message back for. We were in France. Got a message sort of through the commentary system saying you need to apologise for what you said earlier. And I was like, that's only going to draw attention to it.
Yeah.
But I think Ofcom like an apology if there's a swear word used.
They
so
yeah.
I had to
maybe
say...
Maybe no one noticed, and then you go on your Twitter, yeah, yeah, it's a million things.
Well, no one had noticed, because I think I went on Twitter and then, what did you say? Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah.
Now then everyone's rewinding it, finding out where it's clipped. Yeah. And
but
it's
I've still
Twitter.
Got a job, so I can safely say...
We all make mistakes.
I dropped the C-bomb.
Was that one with Haskell,
wasn't
the way it sounds absolutely smashed? Or maybe it was absolutely smashed.
That's hilarious.
That was hilarious.
And he covers his back.
Because that's happened to, I'm sure, all of us before. But, he was obviously quite new to that. And the difference is, he had big headphones on with the microphone attached. So often when it happens, you've got, an earpiece in and you can just, pull it out. Because it is, what happens is, if the sound's behind what you're actually saying, it's your own voice. So you start trying to slow down what you're saying subconsciously so that you can catch up to what it's going. It just sounds like you've had a stroke.
It is weird. It is the weirdest thing. I think any of us watching it would have known exactly what was going on.
None of us
felt
sorry
for him. Funniest thing in the world, but we knew what was going on.
It was a shock, because I was like, Hask, I've never seen him drink. I've never seen him have a drink. And I was like, I mean, it's all right for some people to do it when they want, but at Twickenham, with your first gig, I still think he was steaming. I like the fact that you lads have got his back, but I still think he'd had a couple too many.
Probably.
Should we go on to our favourite game that our listeners, our avid listeners love?
The lads have told them it's their favourite game as well.
Yeah, they've
really looking
been
forward
listening.
To it.
Yeah, here we go.
So, as we like to say, lads, reveal.
Oh, no.
Absolutely stuffed it. Reveal your confectionery, please, lads.
Reveal the confectionery. Well, here we go. Well, I've already mentioned the Toblerone, but that in many ways would be too easy to go for. Yeah. So I present to you the Cadbury's Mini Egg.
Ooh. Hello.
The Cadbury's Mini Egg. The cream egg, of course, is, you could say, is the ultimate king. But the thing I love about the Mini Egg is it is just a confection... that you can eat an obscene amount of in a very short space of time. And again, as I mentioned with Toblerone, I'm a big fan of refrigerated chocolate. You put these little sods in the fridge and they will take all the enamel off your teeth. So that, you know, there is a battle going on.
Mini egg. What I like about those is they're not there all year round.
And also, that's the best salesman pitch I've ever had.
I know, huge.
Martin's just done my whole job for me. I don't need
to
rate the sweets.
But I mean, who hasn't enjoyed one of those? Your kids are very young, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
So give it a few years, and they will start making sweets and things.
I've got a comment to make.
And they'll make those little cornflake nests, chocolate cornflake nests with these. Sweet Jesus! I mean, talk about sugar overload. You have one of those before a game, you'll play brilliantly for 20 minutes, and then they'll go, where are they gone? And you'll be asleep underneath the post.
Normal game.
Then. Absolutely, yes.
My comment would be that that's not a sweet, it's a chocolate.
Huge.
Is this going to be the Jaffa cake or biscuit thing?
Sweets are things that you can sort of take on journeys and things. So I think we should do a test now. We should both have our sweets in our pockets and like run around for a bit and get really hot and sweaty and then... See,
you just, any excuse. See, do you like feels about gladiators?
I've had my sweets in my pocket all day, and you wouldn't have risked that.
I like it.
You had to bring your own special chocolate bag, not a sweet bag.
All right, I'm quite happy to put them in because they've got a crispy outside. They're almost like the minstrel.
You got a fridge in your pocket.
There you go.
So okay. my sweet, I've gone for, and it's a new favourite sweet. I didn't know I liked these. It's my son who introduced them to me. Sherbet lemons.
Oh, absolute granddad treat.
Yeah. I was going to say the exact
lemons.
Thing.
My 6-year-old son has introduced me to sherbet lemons. And they remind me a bit of you, both. Sweet on the outside, but really bitter on the inside.
We'll do ratings out of 10. So appearing.
Okay, oh, well, we're going to do that, and then I'll produce the cream egg.
Oh, we're going straight head to head.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to go...
Okay.
Sherbet lemon into it. Yeah. I think taste zingy. Really hits you, and I'm excited for the sherbet bit.
Yeah.
I haven't had a sherbet lemon for a while, and you know it's coming, but you don't know when. That's what I like about it. Obviously, yeah. on the audio, us clattering sherbet lemons.
Oh, yeah.
Dottie.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go for a bite. I'm impatient.
I was gonna say who's gonna.
You go for it.
Oh, you've done it. Snap! Listen to the snap.
So.
The crunch.
What of your previous ones? The first time you did this, did you say what your favourite?
So for the first 4 weeks, I think it was everyone was in on it, and it was a stitch up, wasn't it?
Bringing like licorice and stuff like that.
Licorice.
Hitman brought licorice in.
Is that awful?
No, awful.
And he found it in the car park.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Oh, these are mini cream eggs.
He doesn't even know what sweet he's brought.
I thought I'd brought mini eggs.
Oh, no.
That almost sounds like you didn't bring them in yourself. Almost.
Almost sounds like I asked for Toblerone, but they didn't find any. Okay, never mind. We're going for the mini cream egg.
Who are they?
We're going for the they.
You have your own sweet personal assistant.
Sweet buyers.
Thank you.
Doesn't everyone have a sweet buyer?
How's that?
Okay, mini cream egg. All right, we're just going to have to rethink this.
For a mini egg, that is bigger than what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a mini cream egg. So it's not quite what I was expecting.
Well, it's a chocolate, so neither me.
No, there we go.
With a normal cream egg, a lot of people bite the top off and then lick the inside out, don't they?
Yeah.
But what do you do with a mini one? Do you just go straight in?
I just put it all in my mouth.
And I have to say, I'm a little bit disappointed by my own sweet. Yeah. If ever there was a sweet moment that's backfired, this is it. Because I thought I'd got mini eggs. I've got mini cream eggs.
And the cream's not runny enough.
No, not enough. The cream to chocolate ratio is not good.
So the mini cream egg doesn't go in the fridge, is what I'm
doing. Mini cream egg, I'd actually say I would not allow these in my house.
Oh, wow.
The mini cream egg. No, it's a waste of time. If you're going to do a cream egg. What? However, I still maintain that the mini egg. Is a classic, but just not these ones.
Would you have a sherbet lemon in your house?
I'd have a sherbet lemon in my car.
In the garage.
I'd have it in my car.
Sherbet lemons are left last at Christmas, aren't they? They're in the bottom of the barrel. We've worked.
I'm gonna have another mini egg. I'm gonna give the mini cream egg another try.
How good they are.
I've enjoyed the chocolate.
You're liking it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the chocolate.
And it's healthy. It's got fruit in it.
Sherbet lemon.
I'm
a chocolate man.
I'm going for, because my egg, the last one had a hole at the bottom, so I wonder whether it
number two tastes a bit better.
No, still not good.
No,
I agree with Ben. I don't think
it's not going to stop you polishing off the whole packet.
I'm going to eat the whole lot. Yeah,
the cream was too.
I'm all right. Thank you.
Too stodgy, I think. So for me, in the battle of the lemon sherbet versus the cream egg, the lemon sherbet's won hands down.
I think the cream egg. I'm more of a chocolate guy though. But then it opens up the debate, doesn't it?
That's
confectionery. Yeah. Okay. By default,
you said reveal your confectionery.
I was going to mention that. Yeah,
it's just because I'd learned a big word.
The briefing we were given.
I'd learned a big word for sweets.
That's my third one.
Yeah, these are terrible.
I know. Yeah, awful. Right. I'm going to stick to my guns and cream egg win for me.
Cream egg.
Mini cream egg, but so technically cream egg.
Yeah.
Well, I brought it, so I've got to say.
You're going to stick with it.
I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah,
just absolutely rinsed it, and then you're going back to it.
I'm on my third one now.
Well,
it's 2-2, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the X Factor. Do we now go back to the public vote?
Yeah. Or? Can I just get an adjudication?
Oh, yeah, but you see, you're already.
Lemon sherbet.
And that'd be the lemon sherbet. Yeah,
yeah,
that'd
be the lemon sherbet.
Thank you. The lemon sherbet's taking it today.
Well, congratulations.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Big moment.
It was a big moment.
There's two eggs there left. Do you want to have.
No, thanks. A couple of eggs left in your bag. Come on.
There you go. That's our little gift to you.
He can have those. His body fats are better than mine.
Thank you very much.
And I think on that note, I think that about finishes us off, doesn't it?
Yep, definitely.
Think about how I'm wording things here. So thank you very much, guys, for coming
thank
on.
Thank you. Thank
I hope
you.
You've enjoyed being on the other side of the table.
It's been, it's been my favourite day ever. Thank you.
Without further ado, remember, any sting goes.